From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
This is not just a battle of wills. We are really fighting for the very soul of this state. We're asking the Democrats to come together to engage with us and make some compromises, create a plan that will set our state on a path to financial health.
The governor's in charge of the executive department. You know that. He's responsible for the administration of the executive department, the implementation of programs in the executive department. The legislature provides authority to spend money. So on your question, how is he doing in managing the finances of the state? That's a real good question for the governor.
Give me an expectation in your mind, an approximation, ma'am, of how much you think the state will receive in revenues in fiscal year 2017.
Well, if we do our work and if we decide that
God,
we're
can
going
you answer
be,
a question, please?
The answer is, I can't tell because I don't know what's
okay.
In the comptroller's office.
You don't know
office,
what your budget bill expects to spend. You don't know what your budget bill expects to bring in. Why are we doing this right now?
I told you why we're doing this right now, because we need an insurance policy for the people of the state
policy?
Of Illinois who depend upon us, people who need a stable, solid budget.
That's the state representative Barbara Flynn Curry, a Democrat, and she was sparring with another representative, Republican Ron Sandeck, debating a spending plan said to be $7 billion out of balance. Yes, a budget passed the Illinois House this week, but don't get too excited about it. We also heard there from House Speaker Michael Madigan and the Senate Republican leader Christine Redonio. The clock is ticking. If this was football, you might say we're in the two-minute warning, but is anyone trying to really move the ball down the field? And just what can we expect over the final days of the spring session as Illinois remains without a budget deal in place? We'll discuss that and more on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler. Charlie is director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Amanda Vinicky, our State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, Brian Mackey, IPR reporter, and our guest Dave McKinney. He's a reporter for Reuters. Dave, thanks for being back on the show with us.
Hey, good being back.
Dave, let me start with you. I guess, should I be feeling some optimism that they're going to get a budget done, or dread that this thing is going to drag out even longer than it already has?
Well, I mean, your sports analogy about the two-minute warning, I think maybe a better sports analogy are like those seasons with the NFL and Major League Baseball where the players went on strike and we went weeks and months without anything. I think that's what we're going into the final few days here.
There might be people who want a replacement player to come in once in a while on some of this, though. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that would be good. No, I think what appears to have happened now, on Friday at the Capitol is that these talks that were going on have collapsed, and there's just not any sense that the Democrats want to play ball here. I mean, the Senate Republicans, the leader, Christine Redonio, is saying the Democrats have pulled the plug on negotiations. On the flip side, you hear Governor Rauner's language saying, hey, I can't do anything without reforms. So nothing has really changed. Nothing has changed in the year and a half here that this has gone on. I mean, we're still where we were.
Now, they have been having these working groups. So, I mean, when we say Democrats don't want to negotiate with the governor, it does seem as though they're at least talking, or is this just all for show?
Well, I have a hard time understanding really what these working groups are. You know, what their real involvement in this process is. I mean, these deals, as we all know, pivot on whether there's agreement between the legislative leaders and the governor. And the working groups, while it's nice to kind of feign this idea that everybody's going to be involved in this, the real deal has to happen at the top. And that just is, it still seems as remote today as it did in May of 2015. We're no closer.
Amanda, let me go to you. Do you see it the same way that this thing is shaping up for, I guess, overtime, if you want to call it that, or just continuing session over the summer with no budget in place?
Yeah, I don't know. When does it stop being overtime for fiscal year 16 and start being that for fiscal year 17? Or does this all just run into one another? It's a new normal and it isn't a good one. I do have to agree with Dave in terms of just the talks have stalled, and it does not appear as if we will be getting any sort of agreement. There had been times and signs of hope throughout the past couple of days throughout the week where you would get almost, you know, a crash and burn, moments of excitement, talks about a deal even as late as Thursday evening. You had these working groups that are tasked with discussing the elements of Governor Bruce Rauner's agenda. To talk about it, they met well into Thursday night, and then Friday morning, no go. House Speaker Michael Madigan coming out of the Friday morning leaders meeting saying that what he had said earlier, that the governor isn't being persuasive, and said that it's also that Rauner keeps on adding elements. So the latest, he said the governor now is trying to talk about reducing retirees' health care. That is something that we've known was out there and an option in terms of saving the state money from Rauner's perspective. But I think there's that element. And there's also, of course, the political element that has never gone away. And when you look at a potential breakdown, as I noted, some people were optimistic, okay, Thursday night, working groups are meeting, maybe there's progress. And then you also have the House Republican Party sending out robocalls against legislators in Democratic districts where the GOP thinks it can make inroads, calls to constituents that are basically shaming the Democrats for having voted for the Speaker Madigan's out-of-balance budget plan. And so you see right there, I think, on both sides, the distrust in how really an election is one of the many elements that is at the root of this entire debacle.
Yeah, and I think that point was also amplified last weekend, where you had the state Republican Party convention, and Governor Rauner gives a fiery speech and shows that there are still a lot of people in Illinois who think he's doing a great job and could, you know, stick it to the Democrats, and especially House Speaker Michael Madigan, and he talks about how we're going to, you know, we need to end their supermajority status and really cut into their majorities this fall, and we're going to, you know, try to pick off as many people as we can. And then very next day, he meets with reporters and says, I am still very optimistic that we can come to a compromise. This is not about partisan politics. And so you have this kind of duality. Everybody says, oh, this is just for the good of Illinois. We heard Senate Republican leader Christine Rodonio at the top of the show talking about this is not a battle of wills. It's a battle for the future of the state. But of course, partisan politics are at the root of this. And what are Democrats really objecting to in the governor's agenda? It's the anti-union planks. It's the planks that would weaken labor unions. And we got to remember that unions are a big part of the Democratic constituency. So even though the governor, yes, it would certainly change the cost structure of government if unions, if some of the union restrictions that Governor Rauner is calling for were put in place, but it would also potentially weaken a very significant support of financial and moral and precinct door knocking support for Democrats in Illinois.
Well, Charlie Wheeler, I would like to say you've been optimistic all along. They're going to work out a deal and everybody's going to hold hands and be happy, but you haven't been. So you're not surprised by what you've seen these last few days.
I'm not surprised, but I'm sort of disappointed. And part of my optimism in the past was based on having watched this stuff for so long. And back in the day when I was a reporter, you know, a generation ago, there were working groups. There were rank and file members who would be assigned to sit down and negotiate on tough issues and come back to the leaders, their respective leaders and their caucuses, and say, here's what we think we got. Can you guys buy it? And that's how things got settled. There wasn't the same level of partisan acrimony, the personal insults, the fact that there would be almost a brawl on the floor. Occasionally there were fisticuffs. I can remember a couple instances. I remember one time I had soup thrown on me. But it wasn't the overall atmosphere that I seem to sense is there now, where there's this really total distrust among the players. And so on the one hand, you say, if they would sit down and work something out, they could do it. There's still plenty of time. I think I saw a quote from Kwame Raoul, the senator from Chicago, saying that 5 days isn't an eternity in Springfield. In a sense, it is. If you would reach agreement, you can move things really quickly. And actually, if you reach agreement on these contentious issues, the deadline of May 31st, after which you would require an extraordinary vote, isn't that difficult a burden, in that once there's agreement, you'll be able to put together roll calls to raise taxes, to make cuts that will be unpopular, but you'll be able to find on both sides of the aisle senators and representatives who can vote for those with relative impunity because they have no real opposition in November.
Well, Charlie, you brought up a good point because maybe June 1st is not that, such a dark day necessarily if they don't get something done. They could come back. But I think something that I'd like for somebody to weigh in on would be if they get past this little point in time, and we're looking at it as sort of a deadline, May 31st, if they get past that, what's the next real deadline? Is it when school starts? Is it the start of the fiscal year? What's the real next deadline, the pressure point that might move these people together a little bit?
Well, you used to say it would be the start of the new budget year on July 1st, but we're about 11 months into the current fiscal year with no budget in place. We're operating on autopilot because of all these consent decrees, on court orders, on statutes that say this has to be paid regardless of whether the legislature budgets for it. And so I guess after that, the pressure point would be if there's no budget for schools to open in August.
And if they can work something out. Go ahead, Dave, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say that if this Senate Bill 2048, the House budget bill, if it winds up being approved by the Senate and sent to Governor Rauner, then, I mean, in that you have the seeds for this school crisis, because if Rauner vetoes it, then he also vetoes the K-12 budget and what's left after that. So, I mean, I talked to some Republicans after this morning's meeting or the Friday morning meeting, and there was this belief that, that from their perspective, the Democrats are intent on sowing the seeds of crisis in this budget. They want to see it blow up
and a capitulation, therefore, on Republicans' part.
That's right. That's right. And,
But Dave, wouldn't it be possible for the governor to do as he did last year and veto everything but the school appropriation? There were two dozen different bills, and he vetoed all but the school.
Right. Now it's all packaged together, however.
The governor has line item vetoes, which would allow him to go in and strip out of the 500-page bill, strip out, what would it be, probably 497 pages by line item vetoing everything and leave
and
the three pages that deal with school funding.
He was asked directly, what would you do? Because this budget gives above and beyond what Governor Bruce Rauner had wanted to give to schools. He says, Democrats didn't give enough. Here I am. I want to give the most we've given to schools in quite some time. And then this takes that and adds much more onto it. So, of course, thereby putting more onto the deficit. Rauner earlier this week was asked directly because while he didn't use the V word, meaning veto, the four-letter V word, his office definitely has kind of his surrogates making known that that would be the case. But would he leave in the education budget? He didn't say either way.
And I'd like to jump in and just to respond to something Dave said about, he's heard from Republicans who say Democrats seem intent on having this budget blow up and prolonging the crisis. And I think it's fair to argue that they're potentially prolonging the crisis. But I also think it's worth remembering that, it was the governor himself who has long talked about, I don't want to be a broken record here, but even before he was in office, talked about using spending, government spending, as leverage and a way to drive a wedge between Democrats who would be willing to turn their back on government employee unions so that they could, continue to have support for social service spending and social justice spending, as he put it. So I don't think that certainly no side has their hands fully clean here. But I mean, I think it's worth remembering that at the heart of this is the governor is trying to push an agenda which is deeply, deeply unpopular with Democrats. And he's been unwilling to negotiate on the budget until they do it. And, you can flip that around if you want. The governor says he's trying to save the state of Illinois and the Democrats are just unwilling to negotiate on his platform because they say it will hurt their constituents in the middle class.
Well, the governor has said he's open to a tax increase. He has discussed that at many points and said that he would be willing to talk about more revenue. That seems to be a pretty good jumping off point to getting some type of compromise. I mean, here's a guy, it's not Brad Blagojevich who constantly would say, you know, I'm not going to sign any tax increase into law. This is a guy who at least has said that he would be in favor of that. So these other issues, and Charlie's touched on this, I think, as well, the, you know, workers' compensation and other things, those are things that are not necessarily, I think, out of the legislature's realm of being able to come up with some deal. So really, just how far apart are they? I mean, it seems to me that somebody mentioned earlier, if you get everybody in a room, you could come up with something. Well, you know, maybe is that what it's going to take? And is that really going to happen, especially if you get the leaders out of the room and maybe the rank and file?
The rank and file really has been meeting continually, and that's where you hear pressure from Governor Bruce Rauner saying, waiting for rank and file Democrats to defy Speaker Madigan and reach a resolution, which of course is interesting because Democrats say the same. They believe that GOP legislators are blindly following Governor Rauner and are waiting for them to leave behind the turnaround agenda, something that really wasn't a top priority for a lot of Republican legislators until he came into office. So they're both pointing the finger at one another. Rank and file did at one point, I think we should all recall, present a budget plan to Governor Rauner, and he evidently nixed it, said it didn't go far enough. It's unclear how that really compares to what the working groups have come up with, but I think it gets back to, as I noted, that robocall, the election ahead, just distrust in general, and the massive amounts of money that, even while the state doesn't have a budget, are flowing to these campaigns, and distrust. Okay, the governor does use the word tax increase, and as Republicans say, that is huge for a Republican to say that, but he hasn't gotten into any specifics. There is just such deep trust that the governor might, you know, say that, but what will it mean? How big will it be? Will he turn around and use that against Democrats in the next campaign cycle? And further, that just there is a total suspension of reality when, on one hand, you have the governor saying, we can't line item veto the budget entirely. There's just too much going out in court order and required appropriation. So there's no way to line item veto and balance a budget, while at the same time casting a tax increase as something that is a boon for Democrats and not a necessity. So you have all of that going on.
And I think the speaker has also said that Democrats wouldn't be in favor of some deep cuts that had been proposed as well, and in that working group framework that was proposed. So it is hard to get these guys together, Charlie.
Yeah, and again, I think it goes back to what's been mentioned already. There's certainly a lack of trust. There's the fear on the Democrat side that if they agree to something with Rauner, he and his minions will turn around and stab him in the back with robocalls and with all this money. There's the fear on the part of the Republicans that if they go along with the Democrats and don't enact some of the governor's agenda, then that will also reflect bad on them and will earn the governor ire later on. And there's not the sense of we're all in this together, so we have to work with one another to get something settled. The kind of attitude that persisted in all the years that I was a reporter for the Sun-Times covering this stuff. And Dave, when you were a reporter for the Sun-Times, it was pretty much the same thing, right? It really didn't reach this level of acrimony until the advent of Governor Rauner.
Well, I mean, some of what we're seeing now does remind me a little bit of the Blagojevich era, and that was, you know, that again was a trust issue, you know, when we had all those memoranda of understanding and everything under Blagojevich. But This is, as everyone has said repeatedly, uncharted territory that we're in. And, you know, I'm sure it's been mentioned on this show before, but that line from Lou Lang at the labor rally about maybe we won't have a budget for the 4 years Governor Rauner's in office. And I sort of wonder what that would actually look like. And is that what we're headed toward? I mean, there are just so many layers of this. It's just fascinating to watch. And we're going to be at the midpoint of Governor Rauner's term here shortly. And it's usually it's kind of the point on the election calendar where you know, potential candidates for 2018 start kind of, you know, girding back and forth a little bit about who's going to take him on. This is this is what this is all about, I think. I think we're heading into a redistricting election in 2018. The Democrats here want a governor in place. You know, they have all this dislike and distrust of him now, but they want a governor in place in the next cycle that they can count on to sign a map that will be favorable to them for the next 10 years. And I think, you know, it's just all bound together in a way. And as a result, you know, we have this situation where, you know, all these services are under the gun. And, you know, the real narrative that I thought that would cause all of this maybe to break, and people have said this before, but you know, someone dying, you know, and I mean, you think back in our history and you know, how an election, not an election, but it was the thing that brought down George Ryan, you know, those six people who died in the van. I mean, if we have a narrative like that happening here because of these budget cuts, you know, my old colleague Mark Brown in one of his columns this week talked about those suicide hotlines that get manned, you know, and I mean, that to me, that the human side of this, it hasn't been, it's been told, but it's not yet been told, you know, and if we get to that point when, you know, this stubbornness here in Springfield results in that, that's when this thing changes.
I think that it could be a couple of other options. Remember, legislators aren't getting their paychecks on time right now. It's not that they're not getting paid, but for some of them for whom this is full-time income, and you do hear complaints, they are waiting months to be paid, and the longer that goes on, you could see some sort of rank-and-file uprising. Similarly, you still have most state employees being paid, and that's because of a court order. Still no further action by the attorney general or anything else that would turn that around. But if there is a reversal, maybe that will change matters. And that goes with saying there is, of course, this ongoing negotiations lack of negotiations between the Rauner administration and AFSCME, which represents most state employees, whether those negotiations need to continue or whether they're so far apart, the labor board will call an impasse. If that is declared and leads to a strike, we're a ways off from that. But regardless, a strike on behalf of state employees, I think, is yet another option that could change things.
But do you see those things, Amanda, happening before an election? I mean, I think that the Democrats want AFSCME in their corner in November.
Oh, fully.
Yeah.
I just also think that, you know, at some point we have to wonder if private industry that keeps Illinois running right now just by their good graces, basically, is going to step up and say enough is enough. You have the companies that provide gas and food for the Department of Corrections, and they provide road salt and other things for the Illinois Department of Transportation. We've already seen where a couple of state parks had to at least temporarily close because the trash company had supposedly cut off service, and the local power co-op cut off service. And then one of those at least was reopened because there was some misunderstanding there. But you have a lot of businesses that have contracts with the state that have basically been floating Illinois for months and months. And at some point, if they were to step up and say, you know what, this contract is just not worth it. We've been working for a year, 18 months, going on 2 years, as you pointed out, Representative Lou Lang said, are they going to go 4 years working for the state of Illinois without getting paid? And then you would finally start to see the effects of a government shutdown. We've had this kind of stealth shutdown, I've said this before, where you know, human service providers haven't gotten paid, and universities until very recently had zero of their state funding. Now most of them have gotten only about a third of what they might have expected to get from the state. But you just have government has been able to keep floating through this patchwork, as somebody else pointed out, court orders and the appropriation of the school money. And I wonder if, you know, something that we haven't talked about yet today is Democrats maybe are also concerned that if they go along with the governor on this agenda now, maybe he'll come back a year from now and say, you know what, I'm not going to negotiate the next budget until we do right to work in the state of Illinois, or at least these right to work zones that are not currently part of his demands to work on a budget, but that is still part of the broader turnaround agenda that he's proposed. And I think that, you know, Democrats might be worried about the precedent of saying, okay, we'll fund, you know, these vulnerable populations, social services and things like that in exchange for further legislative action that you want to have.
I would say one other thing I think that could break this could be just a few rogue Republicans who may decide that, hey, my district's in bad enough shape, So I'm going to help you get the votes that you need, which may only be three or four, you know, to get to basically override the governor or go around him. We'll see if that happens. Charlie?
Well, I was going to say that I guess agreeing with what Brian said, part of the fear for the Democrats is if we give in to Rauner now, what will he ask next year? There's sort of an axiom that when you're dealing with hostage takers, you don't pay the ransom because that encourages them to take more hostages.
And Rauner probably is saying, wait a minute, you just passed a budget that spends $7 billion more than it would take
see,
in. So you can make that argument, too, that they're always going to want to spend more.
That's a popular misconception because, in fact, the budget that the Democrats passed does not appropriate, does not call for spending more money than what the state's going to take in. And that's because they appropriated in there no money for pensions, they appropriated no money for Medicaid, two huge budget items. There are no line items in there to pay for salaries of state employees that are paid out of general funds. So this is weird, but it points to one of the flaws, I think, in the Constitution. The legislation the Democrats passed comports with the literal reading of the finance article in the Constitution that appropriations shall not exceed expected or estimated resources. And they don't, because they simply left out a huge chunk of what normally would be in a budget. It's sort of weird.
I guess we then have to wonder if the Attorney General is ever going to get off the dime on pursuing whether the courts, these judges, individual trial judges, not like the Supreme Court stepped in here yet, have ordered this massive amount of state spending for, you know, employee salaries and all this other stuff without the constitutional authority of the legislature. And so it's kind of been baffling to me that that has not been more of a legal issue, because I think nobody wants to take that on.
And wasn't the precedent set in that ruling on the Ask Me back pay that you need to have an appropriation before you can pay these salaries?
Right, but if the Attorney General and no one else, you know, individual
pursues
legislator,
it,
yeah, is pursuing it, then the courts can't, you know, change
can't act.
Getting running out of time, we're going to go to our notes from the field. Amanda Vinicky.
Speaking of vendors that are waiting to be paid for the state, there's one locally in the capital city, $45 million owed to the Springfield Clinic, where one of these working groups that Governor Bruce Rauner met with local business owners, really, that was the resounding message. Yes, workers' compensation and the like, but they say it is the budget instability that is hurting them most, and they would like resolved. Again, Springfield Clinic says that it is taking out short-term borrowing in order to run day-to-day operations, and at some point won't be able to continue that either.
Dave McKinney.
Illinois has a certain reputation to live up to here with the seediness and corruption that we all know so well. There's a fantasy sports bill that is, you know, the subject of debate between this new industry that's wanting to allow fantasy sports betting online against the existing land-based casinos that want to fight that. Well, during a committee hearing this week, the head of the House Black Caucus stands up and said, you know, I got a problem voting for this because one of the lobbyists that represents this industry approached a member of the Black Caucus and said, look, we'll contribute to your foundation in exchange for votes. And it was an interesting moment to hear unfold in committee where it's like everybody is like, this is not the way we're supposed to be running things here. And so the fate of that bill, you know, it's tied up in everything else, but I think they got a serious problem on their hands getting that bill over the hump as well because of, you know, an offer that a lot of people think is untoward.
Well, that will do it for today's State Week. Members of our broadcast include Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, Brian Mackey, and Dave McKinney with Reuters. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org, and you can also find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. The production assistance for our program today provided by Brian Mackey. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.